Spider-Man, Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes a Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood.
Hey everybody, welcome to another First Run Bald Movies. Tonight, we've got another suburb blockbuster for you. Spider-Man Homecoming, directed by John Watts and starring a bunch of nobodies. Yeah, I mean, all
That's what I'd call it, yeah. Michael Keaton, nobody.
Well, all of the titular heroes and accoutrements there for, I've never heard of any of them before. Huh, I've never heard of John Watts before. He directed Cop Car. Kevin Bacon vehicle, furthering the 6 degrees of bacon.
Kevin Bacon drives a cop car?
He does. He does. And a cop mustache. And Clown, some 2014 horror film. And he got tapped to direct Spider-Man. How did he do?
I think he did really well. I'm super impressed by this movie.
Same here. Like, okay. I feel like I'm running out of superlatives on some of these comic book movies, but... Jesus Christ, Marvel can't fail.
No, there have been so many good ones, even just this year, right?
Yeah.
Like Guardians 2, Wonder Woman, this.
That's a DC flick, but sure, yeah.
Oh, I just mean superhero movies in general. Tons of good ones.
Yeah. And this was... So what's your relationship with the Tobey Maguire era, Sam Raimi, Spider-Man trilogy?
I saw the first two. Didn't bother on three.
You didn't miss much.
Yeah. And then I didn't see any of the James Franco.
James Garfield.
Yeah, Garfield ones. I didn't see any.
I've seen all...
Andrew Garfield, yeah.
Andrew Garfield.
Not James.
Whatever. Who cares?
Yeah.
He's named after Cat. I've seen all the Spider-Man directed by Sam Raimi, and I thought the first one was great. It's a great Spider-Man origin story. I thought the second one was one of the best. It's top five comic book movies of all time. The third one... It's got some charm, but it's largely a phoned in wasted effort. All the Garfield ones sucked, in my opinion. I saw the first one and I thought it was terrible. And then I was talking to David Chin this weekend, and he said the second one was even worse. And we got this one, which I thought they did a lot of smart things in this movie. They didn't try to reboot Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Just this is Spider-Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There are notable differences between him and, like, the real Spider-Man. I saw some people online were getting pissed that, like, you know, this seem, there's no Uncle Ben. How is Spider-Man going to know? With great power comes great responsibility. I don't know, because his mentor is Tony Stark, but it works. It's cool.
Yeah, I liked it.
Like we have that perfect version of that classic, straight out of the mythos Spider-Man. I don't know that we need another. And also, I don't know why I feel that way about Spider-Man, but I'm pissed that what's-his-face turns Superman into a killing machine. Mm-hmm. Like I've got the Richard Donner Supermans. Why do I need, like, the big blue Boy Scout every single movie?
Better suit?
Maybe that's just like a more fundamental betrayal of his character, whereas this Spider-Man, I felt very much like it's the spirit. Maybe even
absolutely.
If it didn't follow beat for beat the Marvel origin story, then this is still the best. This is the best Spider-Man Peter Parker ever. It really helps that he's an actual high school teenager.
Yeah, totally. You know, it's interesting watching this movie. I could not. Warning. You cannot unhear what I'm about to say, and you cannot unsee what I'm about to tell you.
Already?
No, okay. Spoilers. Okay. Just who this actor is in this movie. He is 20% Tobey Maguire.
Okay.
80% Michael J. Fox.
Ooh.
Right?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And now go watch this movie again, go to the theater, get another ticket, and you will not be able to unsee that.
Because Tom Holland, the young man in question, I felt like there's several points in the movie where I felt like he had really studied up on the Tobey Maguire.
Absolutely.
Because he still got that really earnest, you know, kind of all-American inflection. I don't know, you can't put your, it's like, you know, trying to describe apple pie to a man without taste buds.
Right.
It's a fool's errand.
Yeah.
It's a fool's errand. But that's
it. But I know
it.
What you mean, yeah.
Yeah, but you're right.
And then the other part of him is this, like, barely corked bottle of energy.
Yes.
That just wants to explode on the screen. And that's...
Yes.
I just felt that viscerally the whole movie.
Yeah.
And they gave him the same, like, very similar Michael J. Fox from like Back to the Future moments.
Right.
Like the heroic shots up on his face.
Right.
The reveals of like, whoa, this is so cool.
Right.
Like just the, I don't know. I kept seeing it over and over in this movie.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's great. The villain, you know, Michael Keaton as the Vulture.
Reprising his role as Birdman, right?
It's so good. It's so good because that he also like really brings it in this film, I thought.
He does.
I want to get into spoilers, but I don't. The costume design as a comic book fan,
yeah,
brought tears to my eyes. Like they played homage to the stupid neck fringe of the Vulture. Like the Vulture's one of the goofier of Spider-Man's enemies,
huh.
But he's badass in this film. He's recognizably the Vulture, but in a very like, okay, this is what an old guy would kind of cobble out of alien technology. It's very Rocketeer. And it's just amazing. And he's a really good villain. And the things get personal between him and Spider-Man very mm-hmm. early, which I didn't suspect. I thought, you know, as I was watching the initial part of the film, it's like, I wonder how they're going to establish, you know, any kind of like rivalry
mm-hmm.
here. And they did. They did because yeah. these fucking guys at Marvel are geniuses.
it's really good. I do like the way they did it.
I also thought it was so clever how they're able to get a lot of Robert Downey Jr. in the film without a lot of Robert Downey Jr. in the film.
Yeah.
Like this guy probably showed up for half a day filming and maybe a full day's worth of voice work. And he's a big part of the film, but like, you know, if Robert Downey Jr. can do this for the next 15 years and cash checks, if Marvel will have him and he'll have Marvel and not break a sweat.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. And they brought a bunch of other surprises from mm-hmm. the Marvel Cinematic Universe from the very beginning and like
I really enjoyed those.
Yeah, it's just really really good. It's funny, it's wholesome, it's action packed. It's got like the other thing that I continue to be amazed by is how they keep coming up with distinctive and interesting visually set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. It's great.
Yeah. This movie definitely has a style all its own, too. Like, there's a scene toward the end that I feel like kind of defines the look of this movie, which was a very unexpected look, and we'll get into it a little bit more in the spoilers. I'll explain what I mean. But
okay.
It was not what I necessarily thought of as Spider-Man, but now I sort of do.
Okay. Interesting.
I don't know. It was a great looking movie as well.
The other I also liked during the very initial opening, they do a big orchestrative mix of the classic Spider-Man yeah. theme.
Yep.
Spider-Man,
that one, yeah.
And it took me a couple seconds before I recognized it, but that felt right too. Like they just did a good job. Even like I felt like Sony and Marvel shared the screen.
Yeah.
I still think Marvel flexed on them a little bit. We'll talk about that in the spoiler section.
Yeah, they needed it, though. I mean,
yeah.
Spider-Man was going downhill fast, you know?
Yeah. You know what? What it felt like with the whole... Because what happens is, like, Sony gets in there, and, like, it's a Sony picture.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Sony's like the deadbeat dad that takes off when a kid's like 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone all through his high school years. Kids like scrapes together, gets scholarships, gets a great college education, is about to enter the job market, and his fucking drunk dad shows up at his commencement ceremony, and he's the one cheering and clapping the loudest.
Like the villain from the Ninjago Lego movie.
Right, right. And it's like, oh God, what does this guy want? And then yeah. Marvel comes in. He's the adopted stepdad, has been there for him. He's like, you know what? It's cool. He's your father, you know. Take what you can out of the relationship. That's what the different jockeying of the credit sequence I felt like. Like, you know, Marvel's like, yeah, fine, open the movie.
Yeah.
Who gives a
you
shit?
You want first billing, no one you will, got it.
By the time we start rolling Thor and Iron Man and right. you're, no one's gonna remember
Trust
you.
Trust me, nobody's thinking Sony at the end of this movie.
Right. I don't know. Should we put the is it worth saying for the end credits stuff in the non spoiler or should we consider should that be a club member?
I can tell you the answer. The answer is always no. The answer is absolutely always no. I don't stay for them
Did
anymore.
You not stay?
I do
you
not stay for those.
Son of a bitch.
Never.
You son of a bitch.
All right, I get on the podcast and I ask you what happened.
I'm going to save it for the club then. I'm going to because that's certainly a spoiler.
And I do have some minor
gripes. It's a Marvel movie, you know. Oh, me too. Yeah. Me too.
There's I have minor ones.
Even as I admire a certain set piece, there was problems I had with it.
Absolutely. Couple of plot things that I have minor gripes with. But okay. Overall, just a fantastically fun and enjoyable movie.
Right. Okay. So
let me ask you real quick before we get into spoilers. Mm-hmm. This Guardians, Wonder Woman, how would you rank those?
Guardians, Wonder Woman, Home, and Spider-Man?
Those are the only ones we've seen this year,
oh
right?
Oh, my God.
Maybe I should go first because I think I have
Deadpool. Deadpool's last year.
I think it was last year, okay. Yeah. I think this actually topped out Guardians because I had a pretty big problem with the plot in Guardians 2.
What was that?
I don't want to necessarily get... I'm sure everybody's seen Guardians 2 by now.
Okay,
because
did you talk about it on the podcast?
I did,
okay, I'll
yeah.
just listen to the podcast.
Okay.
There you go. I'll just roll tape on our conversation.
Right. Sales pitch.
It's close, but I mean, I feel like the degree of difficulty on Spider-Man, which has been... really, really worn thin in mm-hmm. the public's imagination, and you know, but also like the degree of difficulty of nailing it because people are so familiar with this character, mm-hmm. and like even if you're not a Spider-Man fan, you kind of know his basic shtick. It's the same as like Batman, like Spider-Man. Spider-Man is of all the Marvel characters has the closest to a Batman / Superman public consciousness reach.
Yeah.
And he has. He started off strong. But he's been driven into the dirt of recent years. And there, I remember even this last weekend at the Game of Thrones convention, I had several conversations with fans. You know, it just gets nerdy, and people are like, I don't even know if I'm looking forward to Spider. I mean, it's like, you know, there's been Spider-Man.
And,
it's really hard because they're different films, but I think Spider-Man's probably the best one.
Yeah, I think so. It's close.
Yeah.
I mean, Guardians 2 was super enjoyable as well, but I think I'd probably give it to Spider-Man.
And I don't know whether they actually own this child. Tom Holland was like they own him, in a very uh-huh. real indentured
like in the way they own
slavery kind
Robert
of
Downey Jr. Yeah.
I don't think they own him.
They used to.
I feel like if this is the shoulders of the franchise going beyond Avengers 4, like this guy is just going to grow into the role of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man's got a lot of different kind of life phases he goes through because I was not a DC fan. I was a Spider-Man X-Men fan. When I was growing up in the comic book reading, prime comic book reading years. It's a great Spider-Man. It's mm-hmm. the best Spider-Man I've ever seen.
I think, man, Spider-Man.
And I don't want to take away
Tobey
anything Maguire from Tobey.
Stuff. Yeah, he was good. He was real good for the era. But
he's the Richard Donner Superman.
Yeah.
The Spider-Man. We haven't got Spider-Man, the ultimate version. Like, this is, I guess, Spider-Man, the ultimate version.
Mm-hmm.
What if he didn't have dopey Uncle Ben and he had, like, rock star Uncle Tony as his mentor? As both the devil and angel on his shoulder simultaneously.
Yeah, I wonder what the casting process is like when you go for a Marvel movie, because they nail it every time.
Yeah, they really do.
I mean, Robert Downey Jr. was the perfect Iron Man.
And the thing is like, I don't... Some of this stuff, like Robert Downey Jr., there's not a lot of them that roll down the assembly line, but like Chris Hemsworth, I don't think he was the obvious choice for Thor. Chris Evans had already failed in a Marvel series and was not a great hero, and they looked at him and said, you know what, put 30 pounds of muscle on that guy and he's the best Captain Rogers we've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of not so so I guess do I trust I mean it seems very heretical to say once Robert Downey Jr. and Ruffalo and Evans and Hemsworth, you know, shuffle off the Marvel coil and go on to whatever they're doing in the rest of their lives, like, how can Marvel recover? But Marvel made these guys.
Yeah, no, that's true.
They pulled Downey Jr. out of the fucking rubbish bin, paid him $250,000, told him to be fucking good, and he made Iron Man. Like, that's insane. So... Are you ready to get to the spoiler set? Well,
we got
the trailer section.
Start with those trailers.
Did you have, because we saw this in different theaters, did you have a Black Panther trailer?
No. Well, maybe. I did an early bathroom sprint, and
I got back
during the first trailer. So
okay, well,
maybe.
You might have missed the Black, because I was like, wow, why would they have the biggest Marvel movie and not, you know, pimp the other? Because there's two breakout stars from Captain America 3.
Mm-hmm.
One was Spider-Man, and we see what he can do. Second was Black Panther.
Yeah.
Everybody loved Black Panther. Black Panther was fucking cool and rad and regal and awesome, and we wanted to see more of him. Well, we're going to get more of him.
Yep.
There are so many famous people. I think I saw, I know Angela Bassett's in there. I think I saw Danai Gurira.
Okay.
Gurira?
Yeah, yeah.
I think I saw, who was the mechanical Darth Vader man from Rogue One?
Adam Driver?
No, well, yes. That's in a different trailer. No, you know,
Darth
the guy who's always,
guy.
He's huffing from the thing and he dies.
Oh, Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker. Yeah, Forrest Whitaker's in this
Darth
thing.
Vader. Okay.
I don't know who the, like, I think Andy Serkis is the big villain.
Oh, how big is he?
I don't know. I don't know anything about Black Panther.
Okay.
Like, in all the crossover, and this is, you can probably say a lot about culture if you wanted to. And in all the crossovers I ever read as a kid and in a teenager growing up, like, I might have seen 3 or 4 panels worth of Black Panther.
Hmm, okay.
So I don't know anything about his strengths, powers. I love the idea of this, like, secret African nation that's got, like, the stranglehold on vibranium and is, like, 50 years ahead of anybody so far ahead that no one even knows. They're, like, the lost city of gold that was never found.
Yeah, he's got, like, sharp fingers, right?
He's got, like, adamantium fingers, or maybe they're vibranium fingers. I don't know. His fucking suit's bulletproof. He's so, super strong and super fast. It seems pretty cool. And they resurrected the Martin Freeman... Was he the UN baby monitor for the Avengers in Captain America 3? He's deposing Andy Serkis because he's the only one that's seen the nation of Wakanda and lived. I think it looks cool. It looks real cool. And I'm excited to see it. I have no idea when it comes out, but that's probably a first-run bald movie.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see the movie that bumps it from the schedule. Did you get a trailer for Logan Lucky?
No.
So this stars Kylo Ren, Magic Mike, and James Bond.
Wait.
Adam Driver.
I have to put that picture together in my head.
It's Adam Driver, Daniel Craig, and Channing Tatum. And Kyle,
what?
And Adam Driver and Channing Tatum are rocking they're two brothers, and they're rocking the hillbilly accent. Do you know Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Uh-huh.
Do you know the two idiot brothers that George Clooney escapes with? They sound like that.
Okay.
And they've got the idea that they're going to rob it might be Talladega, some big motor speedway that uses a series of, like, those bank vacuum tubes to move their money back and forth.
Okay.
And they hire Daniel Craig, who's also affecting a very... poor white Southern accent this bomb retrieval expert that they break out of jail to do this heist.
Is it a comedy?
It looks like it's did Soderbergh make the Ocean's 11? Because it claims to be directed by the director of Ocean's 11, 12, and 13. I thought that was Soderbergh.
You might be right.
So it feels like a Southern fried Ocean's 11.
Okay.
It's just a caper movie. It's got tons of famous people in it.
Yeah.
And it looks like fun, but maybe not for me. Maybe not
all
for
right.
me.
Don't know if that's a first run movie, but
no, I don't think so. I got another. I think it's the same trailer for Dark Tower.
Yeah.
I just want to say that, like, because I brought my son to Spider-Man, and like all the stuff that I thought was cheesy about the Dark Tower, the gunplay and the reloading, my son just thought was the most awesome thing ever.
All right,
there you go.
It was the first time my girlfriend had seen it too, and she, at the end of it, she said,
because she's a big Dark Tower fan.
She
right?
is. She's read all the books. I don't know if the was a good or a bad
Right.
But it was, I guess, not exactly what she was expecting from a Dark Tower movie.
Well, and again, it's Dark Tower fan fiction, mm-hmm. is what I've heard it described as. The other trailer that was new was Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
I didn't get any of these, man. I got an entire slew.
Okay,
cool. I got one Verizon commercial short tonight of seeing the entire cast of Silicon Valley.
All right. All right. nice. Yeah. Because we got. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah.
So this the conceit of this Jumanji is it's a like late 80s video game cartridge.
Okay. Yeah. You were talking about this on our road trip.
These high school kids find and they decide, and you have to select a character. There's four characters, and then they get sucked in, and then all the kids turn into an alter ego. Like there's The Rock is one of them. Kevin Hart is this other guy. There's this really hot high school girl who transforms into Jack Black.
Oh, God.
And then there's another girl that transforms into some redhead that I know it's like an Amy Adams type, but a little bit, I don't know. I don't know how to describe her without objectifying her. She's a younger, more athletic and hot version of Amy Adams, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah. And it looks, I mean, it's aimed solidly. It's a family film. But it looks like it might have enough though. Like it's not going to have the adults running, screaming from the room. Cause I thought,
man,
we just watched the original Jumanji last Christmas break with Jack, and it was, it's fun. And it had surprising depth too. Like mm-hmm. I had a lot to say about, you know, like, being bullied as a kid and like abuse and trauma and like crazy family shit. Like it was a heavier film than I remembered it.
I don't know, man. The thing I'm hearing from this is that The Rock is wasting more of his prime time doing family comedies.
You're right. Indefensible.
He should be kicking ass.
I don't
know. Not getting sucked into video games.
Right. That's a move that you make when you can't do the other stuff anymore.
When you're ready for Kindergarten Cop,
it'll
you
be
need
there.
To be like 50.
Turbo Man
yeah.
will be there.
Those roles will
the last
happen
action
to you,
hero will
whether
be
you
there.
Want them to or not. Maybe.
Right. You don't need to go looking for them.
No.
They will find you.
They will.
At your darkest moment. It will be there. All right.
So what
trailers did you get?
I got the Emoji Movie.
Oh my yeah. God! Does it look like a hot fucking mess?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's I don't know. I mean, it's fine for kids. Whatever. They're all the emojis look essentially the same.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the big joke there is, oh, life is much better when you're not experiencing just one emotion all the time or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. And they have the high five symbol. And TJ Miller is like the main guy
is he the
there.
The poop emoji?
No. He should be, but he's not. He's like one of the main like smiley face or something.
Okay, so he's just smiley face?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a pretty generic looking yellow face.
Well, he left Silicon Valley to pursue the next funny thing, which is the Emoji Movie. We'll
guess
see.
So. And then we got also the Ninjago Lego Movie preview. I guess they thought this was like 5-year-olds were attending this.
There's a lot of kids in my audience.
Yeah. It was mostly adults at mine, I think.
Yes.
But I'm at like
night. It's not
one of those
night,
dinner movie theater type things.
Right.
So.
Huh. That's even a more curious decision. So you just had all cartoons, huh?
Yeah, it was real strange.
No Black Panther. Crazy.
But that Ninjago movie has Kumail Nanjiani in it.
Right.
As one of the heroes, I guess.
Yeah. As one of the Ninjagos.
Yeah. And then we got the Kingsmen Golden Circle or whatever again.
Yep. I got that one too.
Got the Dark Tower. I'm trying to think of any others. I think that was about it. Nothing really new aside from those first two cartoony movies.
Okay. So
the Ninjago Lego movie actually looks really, really entertaining.
Well, all of
I know they've been really good.
Right. Like, did you see the Lego
I
movie?
I still haven't seen it.
Okay.
I want to, but
I saw that and I saw Lego Batman, which was mm-hmm. also really, really good.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not surprising. It's, as long as they continue to make smart choices about who directs and writes these things, then there's no reason why the franchise can't, you know, like continue to be awesome, which is a very Lego movie thing to do. Are we ready to get spoilery?
Yeah, let's do it. All right, spoiler time.
Now, I know you said we have problems.
Yeah.
Do you want to start? Because like I've noticed this about myself of late, that even in stuff I love, I tend to lead with the negative stuff, and I have the most to say about the negative stuff.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's a lot more interesting to criticize than
I don't
just
know
to say,
why, yeah,
this is great.
I don't know why, you're right. But I feel like that it's the thing I want to talk about, so we can just get it out of the way.
Yeah, I like sandwiching it with, you know, when we see a good movie that we really like, we do the non-spoilers, which are usually, you know, really, really positive, and then the ending we can go really positive again.
It's the praise-criticism-praise sandwich
Yeah.
that you get in effective management classes. All right, so yeah. Spider-Man's awesome, but here's a couple things. Here's some three things you can work on.
You want to go first?
Okay. And it's the only problem I have. I'm actually curious to hear your other ones. I thought that the final battle between the Vulture and Spider-Man, even though it was a very cool, they're literally fighting on an advanced, super advanced Tony Stark invisible jet.
Yeah.
And it's active camouflage is doing like some, there's some awesome stuff. Like Spider-Man crawls over the, one of the cameras. 'Cause that's how the stealth technology works. Like, look it up. He crawls over in the cameras and then like the entire plane, like flat, like looks like it's Spider-Man crawling past it. And,
yeah. Yeah.
But cool. When it really starts losing the shit and the screen was dark, I found it very hard to follow the punch for punch action.
Huh. Okay.
It looked like it was all solid, but like, I just kind of like when like Jason Bourne gets all shaky cam and it's like, well, this is probably awesome, but I can't tell what the hell's going on. Same thing. It's just all the flickering lights and the quick cuts, and they're both wearing very dark uniforms and essentially a moonless night on a plane putting on a light show,
flying through the clouds.
Yeah, flying through clouds, yeah. And I couldn't tell what the hell was going on.
Okay, I think that's fair. Yeah, I did have a little trouble following it as
that's
well.
That's literally the only criticism I have in a film. Huh, so what do you got?
Real quick, before I get to like my criticisms, I think that was the scene that kind of defined for me the look of this film in a lot of ways, like sort of a neon.
Messy and dark now. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
no,
it was
saying.
Very
yeah.
Like the ending of this whole movie was at night, like bright lights, very neon, like this, you know, color halftone thing going on with the plane. And I don't know. That, to me, that just like set the mood perfectly at the end of that film.
There's also, to speak to the look and feel, there's a very stark gloss put over everything. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I have to ask in this movie, what do you mean when you say Stark?
Oh, I mean like Tony Stark. It's
you
got,
do? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, like that, like very, you know, the suit is looks like it's something that Tony Stark would assemble. All of its computer aided graphics and vision systems and stuff is very, very Jarvis. Yeah, it's very Jarvis.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's get to my gripes because okay. I had one almost instantly off the bat.
Really?
In this movie,
Jon Favreau.
Yeah, him being in it at all.
I thought, like, no. I swear to God, and the end in the bathroom where he was, I thought there was a chance that Tony Stark might pop out of
stalls.
Out of a happy out of Jon Favreau suit.
A happy suit?
Because he's gained one Jon Favreau worth of Favreau since the first movie came out. And hey, it happens to us all.
Sure.
But I swear to God, there was this split second when he said, "Oh, is Tony here in the bathroom?" I thought he was going to split down the midline, open up, and Tony was, and I'm like, that'd actually be a hilarious visual gag. But no, they
wow.
Didn't.
Yeah, missed that would have been pretty funny. I thought the other missed opportunity in that scene is, did you see the scene right before it where Guilfoyle, the other Silicon Valley elite, they're having like the meeting where they're appointing the new coach, right? The girl who gives the middle finger to everybody. Who's the new coach?
Did you get that she's Mary Jane? She's Mary Jane Watson.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my friends call me MJ. Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious, too, because the whole movie I'm thinking, you know, Peter's barking up the wrong girl tree.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's this quiet, nerdy, but obviously very smart, very socially aware lady that he should be making time with.
There you go.
And turns out, kabam.
Yeah, I didn't even make that connection. But in the background, I don't know if you caught it, but the tiger mascot runs through.
Uh-huh.
I thought they missed a perfect opportunity for that tiger mascot to come out of a stall. Because they did the kid coming out, and it was awkward appropriately,
it
was funny. But what if he was in a tiger suit?
I thought it was weird him running real fast, because my first thought is, like, is Peter Parker the mascot now? That would be kind of, like, you know, really open up the mascot possibilities. But
yeah, I don't know where he was going.
Yeah, it's really, really weird.
But no, right off the bat, it starts with Michael Keaton doing his salvage operation, right?
Yeah.
And he's gathering up, which I think is cool because it's something we always talk about, like the fallout from the superhero thing.
Right.
They got the Department of, what is it, DC? Department of
Damage Control.
Damage Control.
Which
yeah.
is awesome.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
But Michael Keaton is apparently just this nobody salvage guy.
Uh-huh.
And yet he has a crew of dudes who can, with one piece of alien technology in their pocket, beat the military to market with this technology and turn it into all these super weapons. Like, his dumbass crew.
It did take him 8 years.
fine, 8 years, whatever. I just don't know, A, where he got the money. He said he was strapped and this would bankrupt him and destroy his family.
Right.
So I guess that didn't happen. And then they only had one piece of it, whereas the military had been gathering and gathering and gathering. Apparently never did anything with
it. Well, wait. They had a whole pickup truck full of it.
Right. That's true.
Okay. Because I thought,
I forgot about the previous days.
I thought
salvage.
You could, like, my idea is that he cobbled like 3 or 4 guns together, sold them for a mint, and just rolled. And then obviously he built the Vulture suit to help him steal from the Department of Damage Control.
Right. But then here's a guy who has developed all of these fantastic weapons, right? And does not have, and decides, instead of going after the $50 billion military contract that he could probably get at that point. He's going to sell to low-level street thugs for what, 500? Is this a 38 special deal in the back alley?
I feel like they tried to address that by having the Department of Damage Control lady say, if you are ever found with this alien technology, you'll do.
But come on.
Federal time.
You think that's true? Once he's developed all these weapons, he goes to the military and says, hey, you want these?
There was an underdeveloped plot where when Peter Parker confronts the Vulture, Michael Keaton, he's like, look, I am doing nothing that Tony Stark and his dad didn't do on a much bigger scale. Like, I'm just like, and I'm, and I felt like there wasn't a real answer because throughout the whole movie, there's undertone of like the little guy's getting fucked. Like he signed up New York in its hour of need as trying to get everybody down here to clean up this. Who knows how dangerous this shit is, but these guys are volunteering and he's staffed up and he bought equipment and special stuff and he's doing, and he feels like I felt like he was doing something like noble or patriotic. Like, I'm helping New York get back on its feet. And he was, like, looking up at the Avengers Tower and thinking this is all. And these guys come in and it's like, you know, not only get fucked, but also, like, super arrogant about it. Like, you know, not like, hey, we'll buy out your contract or we'll make sure, just like, oh, guess you shouldn't have overextended yourself. Well,
yeah, at least buy out the contract.
Yeah, like, and there's, so I felt like I'm left with this uncomfortable thing of like, I'm supposed to think the Vulture's bad because somewhere along the way he kind of, you know, lost himself. Like, yeah, sure. Don't sell weapons of mass destruction to criminals and terrorists and whatnot. But also, don't create the supervillain by fucking squeezing the guy out. Like,
yeah.
I was kind of conflicted about that.
I'm not sure.
And they kept bringing it up in the movie, this, like, you know, him being a scrappy underdog. And but they didn't really, it was just lip service played to that, because in the end, he was a villain that had to be defeated.
Yeah, it's
now,
true.
He does have a little bit, like, you know, in the end, he's got this nobility to him, because he's doing his big armed steal with Nacho from Better Call Saul.
Right, that was one of the other cameos. On the screen for exactly 2.5 seconds.
Right, and the guy's like, hey, I heard you're rumored that you know who Spider-Man is. Because here's the other thing that I thought was awesome, is the twist of the movie. That Michael Keaton is the daughter of the guy.
I thought the reveal on that was a little
okay, well,
and then
talk
I think the scene,
that.
The driving scene on the way to Homecoming, was a little overdone. But other than that,
but what
was cool.
What was I say? Oh, Michael Keaton acts like he doesn't know who Spider-Man is.
Yeah,
so he's protecting his daughter. He's protecting. But he decides Spider-Man. I mean, he does owe Spider-Man. Like Spider-Man saved his daughter,
and he says as much.
And then he saves his own ass. Mm-hmm. So like, I wonder what the future has in store for the Vulture.
Team up. I don't know. They got to fight the Green Goblin.
Cool. I mean, that's
at some
what they
point,
did.
Right?
That's kind of, you know,
or Doc Ock,
the Hobgoblin team up in the second one, something like that, to defeat Dr. Octopus and save Mary Jane.
I don't remember, but sure, that sounds reasonable.
Yeah, maybe they're going to go that way. Anyway, what was your other problem?
One of my other problems was the definite like Tony Stark Mufasa moment, where he gets crushed under this building and he looks in the water and you literally hear Tony Stark repeat the words from previously in the movie.
Oh.
I thought that was a little much. Okay. Maybe trust your audience a little bit more.
I thought it was a way, because like, I was impressed that they found the way to pay homage to this classic Spider-Man moment of you know, Peter Parker, half of his space is Spider-Man, half of it's like, you know, battle. They did right. that to perfection in the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man, and here they did it with like a mud puddle mashup, which I thought... It's a great way to get that classic shot of Spider-Man in his, you know, a moment of emotional and physical crisis without, you know, literally doing it the way the other movie did.
Yeah.
Which I admire. Yeah. So I didn't get the whole Mufasa thing.
It was just a little much for me.
Uh-huh.
But that's the other thing about Tony Stark, right, is he's trying to mentor this kid and sort of make up for the stuff that he feels he's done wrong.
And he himself had a terrible father. He himself not a good role model. And like all that is baked into this performance.
Yeah, I think it was great. The relationship between those two made a lot of sense, especially with, you know, what we saw in Captain America 3. It felt just more like a continuation of that.
Oh, God. By the way, loved the opening of the movie where it's essentially Peter Parker's YouTube unreleased YouTube
his blog
series about being Spider-Man.
Oh, so good.
It was really funny. It was really funny to recontextualize. And I'm glad because I realized he hadn't seen Captain America 3.
Oh, yeah.
So like this week it's on Netflix. So I've sat him down. I was like, you probably need to watch this before you see Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm glad I did because that first 5 minutes would have been nothing but what the hell's going on, Dad?
Yeah,
I avoided all that. Now he's like, you know, like when you get a glimpse of Ant-Man going big, it's like, ha ha, instead of like, what the hell?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
A lot of little nods.
But I like that. Like, you know, when like it's funny because me and my son had some wry looks when like Tony was yelling at Spider-Man and he's like, damn it, now I sound like my father. Because unless your father's a complete shit, maybe like I don't know, like the literal deadbeat alcoholic dad that shows up your college commencement.
Mm-hmm.
Like eventually at some point you're going to repeat something that your parents said that you thought was stupid.
Oh yeah.
Because it turns out they're right.
And you'll have that moment, the same moment Tony Stark had where you go, oh my God, I'm turning into my parents. I've done that.
Yes. Yes.
I think we all have. The other moment, it was both cool but also really dumb, is that boat scene.
That's
just not how boats work. Like once the boat is cut in half.
Yeah.
I don't think it just falls away as it continues to float toward the Statue of Liberty.
Well,
I think it immediately starts sinking.
I was trying to figure out the physics of that, too. Like, if you literally cut a boat entirely in half and the two sides fell apart, like, wouldn't they make kind of like two? I mean, yeah, it would eventually sink, but wouldn't they kind of make two separate boats?
I just don't think the bottom would stay together.
It seems like it would, just instantly sink.
Yeah.
Maybe
there's nothing.
I was trying to look at
just all the way to the
metal. I was trying to look at the bottom to see if maybe, like, it didn't fully cut it in half, so it was like, structurally being pulled in half, but there was still a bottom to it. I don't know.
I found it a little over the top, but still, it was really cool. I loved Spider-Man swinging through, spraying every freaking web he's got.
Yeah,
trying to keep this thing together.
Tobey Maguire, like, you know, Spider-Man in cruciform pose, being pulled apart by something. Like in Tobey's case, it was a train. This was that. And then Iron Man saves the day.
Has the classic like rope climber problem where if two ropes aren't going to hold you,
then a
single rope of the same type won't.
Right.
Like he's got 50 webs keeping this together,
right,
and those snap, but yet he's able with two webs to pull it a little bit closer.
I guess.
I don't know. His body's the catalyst.
Yeah, his body's the shock absorber. It's keeping the tension in play. Yeah.
Whatever. It's a superhero
movie. Thank God
for
Tony Stark. He would have like killed so many people.
Oh, yeah.
Which I guess that was Iron Man's point.
Yeah, it was.
Also like how they set up that like Iron Man is often an empty suit. Like that gag. And like he's scolding him as an empty suit. And then, you know, Spider-Man calls him on it. And then poof, he just busts out in a suit. And I think it looks utterly convincing and real, but like I don't know how they get away with it.
Uh-huh.
Like in the last time I saw Tony Stark, like in the first movie, he's got this giant apparatus that's the size of a building that dresses him.
Uh-huh.
In the last movie, he literally sticks his finger into like a cigarette lighter.
Oh right!
And that whole thing envelops him in Iron Man, and now he can just like step out of it like it's a refrigerator box.
Yeah.
Like, and instantly, like, there's no, like, it's just like, bam, there he is, here I am. Robert
yeah, he
Downey
really
Jr.
skimped on the Spider-Man suit, considering.
Yeah.
Like, that was a whole process to get into that thing.
Yeah, like, I thought it was really cool. It's, like, kind of baggy, and then you hit the button, and it just instantly tightens up. I mean, I thought for what it is, it's a cool suit.
No, the suit's awesome, but it's just no
Iron Man
suit.
Didn't even
get
to scratch
suit.
The surface of what it's capable of, too.
It's true. 500-something... web-slinging modes.
Yeah, what the hell's all that all about?
Yeah,
which I also thought that was
scenes.
Another nice, because I don't feel like, in the comics, Spider-Man's always, he's able to do, like, bullet webs and sticky bomb webs and, like, all these different types of webs, and I felt like they got a lot more of that in there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why the fuck they decided it was a good idea to have Peter have, the organic web shooters, pretty inexcusable. That's gross.
organic web shooters.
Yeah, like the Tobey Maguire had like glands in his wrist.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant in this. I was like, I thought he had
no.
Things.
And that's the other thing is like, number one, it's dumb because a lot of dramatic possibilities are wrung out of the comic book version by him running out of web fluid in inopportune times. And they play with that in this movie too. Mm-hmm. But just, it's gross. It's gross.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Pretty gross.
And he also can just shoot webs. Like, that's it. You know, there you go.
He could be completely nude.
Yeah.
Nude man.
Yeah.
If he wanted to be.
So yeah, they're, what are your other problems?
Not much. I mean, speaking about the suit, I knew he had to get the suit by the end of the movie, like permanently, right? Because you can't have Spider-Man 2, whatever it is, Spider-Man
in underoos, yeah.
Prom edition. Yeah. Mm. In his hoodie.
Right.
And in his stupid goggles. You gotta have him in the suit.
You gotta upgrade. I like the fact that he had to go back to the old suit.
Yeah, I did too.
To humble him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, boy, his Avengers model Spider-Man suit is baller.
It is.
Like, I'm kind of pissed that he doesn't get that.
That's the suit he can just step out of.
Yeah, that suit looked like, I was like, wow, that is a really cool Spider-Man suit. I thought that the Homecoming suit was cool, but this Avengers Spider-Man suit is fucking hot.
Yeah.
And it just was yanked, is that beautiful Vision was yanked away. The same, by Gwyneth fucking Paltrow.
Mm-hmm.
My She's cinematic back. Kryptonite. Yeah, get to her. You know, get her out of my Marvel.
Get her out of here.
Get her out. It's contaminating it. It's just contaminating everything. It's bad.
Pepper Potts.
I don't like her. Don't like her. Don't like her face. Don't like her goop. Don't like her organic web shooters. She just get the fuck out of there.
What do you think about Stan Lee's cameo?
Good.
I thought it was better than
usual,
actually.
You know
what
bummed me out? On the way home, I found out, and this, I'm not making this up, and if this is a prank, I'm going to be pissed. Stan Lee's wife died today.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
That sucks.
You know, it's bittersweet because, like, it's kind of... yeah, it does. Huh.
Yeah. Sorry, Stan. That's a shame.
She was 93 years old.
Okay. That's not too much of a shame, though. 93 is a pretty good life.
Yeah, it's a pretty good life. And, you know, I don't know. There's been a lot of things said about him, but he's been a hell of an ambassador for Marvel Comics. And
it's true.
I've never heard anyone that met him that said he's anything but like what you'd think he would be. Mm-hmm. And it's too bad. I'm sorry. Sorry, Mr. Lee. Hope we have you around for a long time, but that's some rough justice.
I don't have any more complaints about
the
movie. I think all my gripes were pretty minor and easily overlooked in such a fun movie. I think they really nailed the high school stakes of this movie, like in the so there's two like separate lives here going on, right? As is the case with Peter Parker,
right?
You've got the Spider-Man one, which has very high stakes, like people dying and cities being destroyed and stuff. And then you've got what I felt was the most high school of all stakes, is just like hurt feelings and misunderstandings, essentially, mm-hmm. with people that you probably won't know in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like this movie really nailed the high schoolness of Peter Parker.
Yeah.
In a way that even like the Tobey Maguire stuff didn't quite do. He always felt like he and Kirsten Dunst were just like a little bit too old to be realistically high school for
me.
And
there wasn't a lot other than...
And the action was so it was overblown, right?
Yeah,
superhero way.
There was hardly any Spider-Man in school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was more out and about in town. And
exactly.
It feels
exactly.
like an adult thing.
Yeah, I enjoyed that too. The fact that there's a homecoming dance, the fact that, mm-hmm. you know, one of the big moral temptations for Spider-Man in this movie was, should I show up in costume and impress everybody?
Yeah.
Should
I tell the girl I like that I like her?
Yeah, and having a conversation with Tony Stark's artificial intelligence about it.
That was pretty good.
I like that whole, like, the fact that I got the idea that maybe the suit was getting jealous. Or
think
maybe
so?
Not. I don't know.
I think it was the friendly helper.
Because when she said, oh, is that Liz or whatever,
yeah.
like I thought maybe that was bitchy, but maybe it was also she's just excited to see the woman that, like, you know, Spider-Man's
yeah.
been talking so much about,
right, that her friend's been talking
but
about.
But I love that scene where they're locked in the bunker and just talking.
Yeah,
so Peter's just talking to this
how
person.
Long have you been in here?
37
minutes.
What? Yeah.
I gotta get out of here.
That was super good. I also like the idea of Spider-Man in the suburbs.
Uh-huh.
And how crippled he was.
Yeah.
Because there's no giant, like, Spider-Man, he's out in upstate New York. There's no skyscrapers here.
Yep.
The
Ferris Bueller.
Maybe
moment.
Yeah, the Ferris. Oh my God, that was so, because when you said Michael J. Fox, like, yes, They had, you know, because he's one of the great cinematic teenagers.
Yeah.
But then you also got Ferris Bueller right in the mix, and they're doing a direct shot for shot kind of like homage of him running through the backyards, and then they actually cut. There's a pretty clever way to like a family's watching Ferris Bueller in some kind of backyard barbecue situation. It's awesome. Spider-Man in suburbs is cool, and I wonder if that's half the reason he turned down Avengers gig, because he's like, look, I got to stay in the big cities. Like, if Chicago or New York needs saving, I'm your man. Like, Hong Kong, a couple of the Arabs, Dubai, fine.
Tokyo is his playground,
if
man.
If L.A. needs saving, it's not going to get saved.
I hope it's downtown.
Outside of a, like a four-block radius of downtown, you ain't swinging nowhere, Spider-Man.
Yep.
But that was really funny.
I feel like Spider-Man and Iron Man could be a pretty good team, though, because you can swing from Iron Man all
day.
That's
the thing. Spider-Man has synergy with almost everybody because his powers are very complementary, and like, you know, it's always fun. Like, I always liked when to see like Spider-Man and Wolverine teamed up a couple of memorable occasions. Spider-Man and Captain America was always fun. There was a Spider-Man Punisher, several Spider-Man Punisher team ups, which was always devolved into Spider-Man trying to keep the Punisher from killing the guy at the very in the last act of the team up. And man. Punisher vowing that he'd kill Spider-Man for making him miss a shot. Right. If I see you again in my neighborhood, I'm killing you, Spider-Man. Like, okay, see you next team up.
To get that Wolverine Spider-Man team up, you're really gonna have to pull a lot of strings between Fox and Sony and Marvel. And
that's the other question I was thinking, and when I was watching them like awkwardly share credits in the beginning, I wondered what it would take to get the X-Men away from Sony. Because between
Sony,
like, we talked about this on, I think, Wonder Woman, or no, it was actually the Driver or Baby Driver podcast. Like, but there's a lot tied up in the X-Men Fantastic Four contract, like Silver Surfer, Galactus, like a lot of the big cosmic threats that the Avengers would take on are all tied up in there. Like the Skrull and the Shi'ar, all that. Like, that's, it's essentially Thanos, and that's it. Like, once he's taken, like, unless they get some more stuff from Sony, it's a really interesting question about where they would go next in phase four. But I wonder. I mean, here's the thing: Disney bought Star Wars for $4 billion. How much fucking money would it take to get X-Men away from Fox and Silver Surfer? Is it Fox
can't be
own
that much?
Is Fox own X-Men and Sony owns Fantastic Four?
Yeah, like Fantastic Four. I don't know. I don't know where Fantastic Four is.
Fantastic Four would probably be. I think that'd be the better franchise to get, just because it gives them a lot more runway for big bads in the future. But I don't know. Like, I surely not $4 billion. If you bought all of Star Wars for $4 billion, like, what's X Men worth? $1 billion?
I'd take $1 billion for it.
I feel like, I feel like if X Men and Fantastic Four are a cool $1 billion, the mouse walks away happy.
Yeah.
As happy,
and so does Fox and Sony.
I would think so. The other thing is, like, I guess Sony's kind of like going bankrupt, like across the board. They're just having
across
hard times. Yeah. Sony Televisions, the Walkman. I don't know if you noticed it hasn't
got to be good.
Maybe. But I've heard that Sony in particular in their pictures was. That's an obnoxious thing about Sony. It's like a Sony picture and then a Columbia picture, division of Sony. And then it's like, I was like, get the fuck out of here with this. Come on.
Has Marvel done any just wholesale making up of new characters in these movies, like new bad guys and threats and stuff?
I don't know because where they would have made him up is like some of the minor, like, I don't know if that helmet guy from Captain America 3 was a real thing, but I think what they do more than anything is take minor characters and put like a Marvel Cinematic Universe spin on it and create memorable villains like that. Like, this, you know, this fucking Vulture probably has nothing in common with the Spider-Man villain Vulture, but his look and feel, and they gave him a completely different backstory and a completely different motivations and a completely different relationship to Spider-Man, but it works.
Yeah.
Like, this Spider-Man, like, they get rid of the Uncle Ben crap, they give him a Tony Stark suit, and it's gold. Like, they're very good at doing that thing. So I wouldn't be the guy to tell you whether some of these guys, like, I'm like, yeah. the the guy, the fire shifter guy from Iron Man 3, is that like the Mandarin certain? Yeah, like they faked you out in Spider-Man 3, or sorry, Iron Man 3. You think it's the Mandarin, which is this classic Iron Man foe, and he's just like this, you know, public face. Huh. With Ben Kingsley on, like, this other international terrorist guy who's got some kind of bio-enhanced fire powers. It's Spider-Man. Iron Man 3 is a mess.
I don't think I've seen that one. The Whiplash one is the last I saw.
Yeah. All the Iron Man sequels have been kind of crappy. He's like, I feel like he is better when he's not in his own vehicle.
Yeah.
Iron Man 1 still holds up. But anyway, yeah, I don't know if they've... I guess there's nothing stopping them from doing it.
No, I'm just wondering. It seems like... That's interesting to lean on your whole catalog, right? And not have to actually make up any new characters or anything.
Right.
I know they're twisting them and they're writing original stories for them. Which
they could also, there's nothing saying that like they couldn't, because some of the big bads in like Doctor Strange's universe, you know, like Dormammu and Mephistopheles and some they're cosmic threats in their own right. And there's nothing to say that you couldn't take that and just like the way they took, you know, Thor's brother Loki and made him kind of like a big bad through several different movie arcs.
Yeah, maybe not the Spider-Man movie for Dormammu, right. But Spider-Man would fight Dormammu.
Like, you know, that's I don't know if it's still the case, but back when I was a teenager, during the Infinity War, when Spider-Man got the power cosmic, he was briefly the most powerful being in the Marvel Universe.
Okay.
So, It's part of canon that Spider-Man can duke it out with the likes of Galactus and Thanos. He just needs a power cosmic. So
could anybody get that?
That's what I'm saying.
Thor gets a hold of that.
It's like you saw what kind of shit Loki got up to with just one of the Infinity Stones. I feel like the wrong person gets an Infinity Stone, and like, what's the Vulture look like? What's Michael Keaton going to do with the Infinity Stone? Nothing good. Tell you that much. Nothing good.
Nope.
What else we want to talk about?
I think that's all I've got. Unless you got something else, we'll close it out.
I don't think so. I just want to talk about, you know, Guilfoyle.
The
new suit. That's like an interesting. So I want to talk about the twist where you show up to, you know, Liz's house or whatever. I think it's Liz, wasn't it?
Yes.
You show up to Peter Parker's main squeeze, and you open a door, and it's Michael Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they were playing the whole, oh, the arch villain has found that, his secret identity, and he's got this family, and he's going to... But the way it turns out is it's Spider-Man knows he's the villain, but the villain doesn't know he's Spider-Man. It reminded me a lot, and I wonder if this is a bit of the homage, of Michael Keaton's performance in Batman Returns, where... Him and Michelle Pfeiffer, as they're dancing in this big society dance, they both kind of have a simultaneous realization that, oh, shit, I'm Batman, and oh, shit, you're Catwoman. And, like, I think Michelle Pfeiffer's like, so what do we do now? Start fighting. Like, it tickles me that he's done enough of this shit that, like, some of these beats are in these new roles. But I thought that was really clever just to have him, you know, like, the Peter Parker's going to this... high school, which is, I guess, is like a gift. Like the whole thing's a gifted and talented high school.
Yeah.
Like even Flash Thompson is a brainiac in this version of Spider-Man. And it like made sense that like, you know, this girl would have this big mansion in the suburbs that he's financed with his illegal arms activity. And she's completely ignorant of it. And, you know, that's the other thing is like, how the hell is she living in the suburbs going to the same school that Peter's going to in the heart of New York City?
Yeah.
Like that doesn't make any damn sense. Like what's this poor girl's commute
every
day?
School.
Yeah.
How's Aunt May paying for private school for Peter Parker? What does she do?
Is she
like a doctor or something?
She gets rice pudding on the side.
She did do that during this movie and got a wink
Aunt May's just straight hooking. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's whatever Marissa Tomei can fetch on the open market. That's a damn good question. Like, I'm guessing that, like, Peter Parker is brilliant. I mean, they also nail the fact that he's brilliant. That's the other reason I didn't like the organic web shooters. It made us have to just trust that Spider-Man's smart because of a few conversations he had with, like, you know, professors and stuff. Whereas in the comics, he builds his shit. He builds his own shit. You know he's smart.
Yeah.
I guess if he's that smart, maybe he got some kind of, like, just merit scholarship or something.
Could be.
Because The other thing that we haven't talked about is the sidekick.
Okay, yeah. Let's talk about...
the chair, the guy in the chair.
What the guy was in the chair.
Ned.
Ned, yes.
I thought Ned was really cool.
He was, yeah. Like especially when he first found out about him being Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's the... so because you got this like comic book perfect scene of Peter Parker sneaking back into his room as Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
And it's some of the coolest Spider-Man action, like very small but cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he executes it perfectly and he gets in there and he shuts the door that Aunt May being any the wiser. And then they pan behind him and you see Ned sitting there with a partially constructed Lego Death Star that he just lets fall and shatters.
Oh, so sad.
And then the scene of him wearing, you know, big fat Ned wearing a Spider-Man hood.
Uh-huh.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
And he's asking him all the questions in school and just,
and wanting to be the man in the chair. Which
he later becomes.
Yeah, I think that's, I hope Ned is a Spider-Man fixture because I felt like they had good chemistry. And Spider-Man... to tell you the truth, he does need a man in a chair.
Yeah, and I mean, the stakes, you know, I talked about the high school stakes. They even come down to that scene, right? Like, he's looking up the manual for an Audi.
Right.
How do you turn the headlights
on?
Right,
yeah.
That's a kid who's never driven a car before.
Right.
And is in over his head and needs his buddy. I think it's great.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the fact that they're both awkward and Ned's trying to work his mojo with the fucking fedora.
Yeah.
And
that's not working. Listen to this.
That's not working, Peter. It's good. It's a great Spider-Man. I'm excited to see, because I know he's going to be in the newest Avengers movie, because I've seen him and Chris Pratt and Robert Downey Jr. on the set, like, you know, just mugging and having fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to have this this Spider-Man. And the, you know, even the title, Homecoming, was epic. The fact that this is Marvel bringing Spider-Man back into the fold, I thought was a great way to handle that.
It is. I have one final question for you.
Yes.
Unrelated to Spider-Man.
Yes. Oh, I got to tell you about the post-credit teasers, too.
Oh, right. Let's do that first.
Okay. Shit, if I can remember them. Because does the movie end with Aunt May finding out that he's Spider-Man?
Yes. Yeah. Which kind of surprised me, but...
Shit, what was the post-credit sequence? And it had already had Nacho talking to Michael Keaton, right? In prison?
No.
About, he says, I heard you know who Spider-Man is. Maybe that's a post-credit sequence. It's them in jail, and you know, Nacho's all beat up, and his face is all, and I'm thinking, like, maybe I'm supposed to understand that Nacho is the next Spider-Man villain, but he goes up to Michael Keaton, the Vulture, and says, hey, you know, that's pretty fucked up, and, like, Michael Keaton's like, am I going to have to fight you? He's like, no, we're all good. We know who the real person to blame is. Who this is really on is our spider friend. And he goes, I hear the rumor is you know who he is. And Michael Keaton denies it. And then has that kind of noble look on his face as Nacho passes him. So that was the first post-credit sequence.
There was more than one?
And then the last one at the very end of the movie, you know how, like, Chris Evans was doing those... doing those Captain America public service announcements the whole time.
Yeah, great.
Which was awesome. Was awesome. Well, he does another one of those. It's just him in a white screen. And it's like, now I want to talk about delayed gratification and how sometimes you just wait for something and you wait and you wait and you think it's going to be great and then it turns out to be something of a disappointment. And he just kind of looks at you for a couple of seconds and he's like, how many more of these do I got to do? And then if it cuts to black. So it's literally a meta joke about Marvel
waiting through the credits,
being this giant cock tease, and it's hardly ever worth it. And that literally wasn't. It's just a joke about what a sucker you are to sit there. But
they didn't get me.
It's actually kind of funny, so it's kind of worth sitting through. And that's the thing. Like, 90% of the theater, their ass stays glued until the final thing now. Like, Marvel's got people fucking trained.
I'm not doing it.
Yeah, well,
I'm the one holdout.
Good for you.
I'm not going to celebrate something that was built by slaves. It's not going to happen.
Oh wow, strong. do you want to talk about something else? I also want to pimp the next thing we're doing. We got 2 weeks off, I believe, July 21st. Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Dunkirk.
That won't be nearly as much fun.
No, it doesn't look to be. It doesn't look to be. It like but just the trailer made. It's interesting to see like the effect of this trailer on my 10-year-old son because it's like it's got the tick, 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 and people are dying and people are getting like – and he was just a fucking ball. And there's like he's never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
He wants to see – like he says he's ready for rated R films. I'm like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to sleep if I take you to Dunkirk. But anyway, Dunkirk's next, July 21st. which cool. probably means our review will be out the 20th. What yep. else did you want to say?
My one question. So we saw the other Avengers, the Justice League trailer again, where they have the Flash, right?
Oh, right. Okay.
Batman throws a batarang at him or whatever, and he catches it.
Yeah.
Is the Flash allowed to play football?
Allowed?
Yeah.
I mean,
he doesn't have, like, I can think of a lot of, all the superheroes would be great at football, right? But, sure. like, Tony Stark wouldn't be allowed to play in his suit.
Sure.
But the Flash is just fast. Like,
right. And he also has
how fast
over
can
that
you be
speed.
Before you're banned?
Right. Like, it's kind of like the end of, did you ever watch the movie The Incredibles?
I did not.
Goddamn.
I know. I need to see that one.
But at the end of that, where, like, you know, it's kind of like how the super family is going to fit in normal society, there's this really funny scene where their mom and dad are like, because they wanted the son's been wanting to try out for track, but he's like, he's a super fast guy.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, like, he's running the race and, like, he starts to pull ahead of the pack, and her mom and dad are like, no, pull it back. And he starts kind of jogging the kids past, and they're like, no, faster. It's like, keep it close. So he comes in at like third, which I always thought's like, that's a weird message for the film. Like, if the whole thing is like he wants to go out and compete and excel and be, and then now he's like still kind of hiding his light under the basket. But I don't, to answer your question.
I mean, that seems like the most lucrative thing to do
seems,
with his speed.
Yeah, because it's like shaving points in any kind of sporting event. Like, you don't have to be light speed to have a decisive advantage. You could be like a quarter second faster than anyone else on the field and
exactly
and
as fast as you need to be for them not to catch you.
Right. Or to get keep it human, but like, you know, peak human level.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be pisser.
And he would be the MVP of every game.
He could also, like, there's so many things he can do with the power. Like, he can rob banks. He can, like, he's essentially time stops. Like, he's like,
they'd have to get those super high frame rate cameras to even see who it was.
I know. I don't, because in
4,000 frames a second.
In the comics, it's always kind of a toss up who's the fastest man in the DC universe, like Flash or Superman.
Right.
And so, like, I think that means he can probably move, like, near light speed if he had to, which that fucking boggles my mind. There's, like, so many fucking problems with that, the physics of that. But I don't know. There's a speed force in the DC universe, and he's got it.
That's what I'd do with it. I'd play football.
I'd rob banks.
Really?
I mean, you're...
That seems like a much more honest way to make a living.
Wait a second. We're both deriving our money from deceit.
I wouldn't deceive. I would just go flat out every time.
Oh, really?
I would just shoot across the field at lightning speed, and I would touchdown every single time.
Like, as an enhanced human, you're still not playing on a level playing field. So, like, mine
I don't
like...
want to play on a level playing field. I just want to know if the rules would allow me to play at top speed. And I don't know why they wouldn't, because I'm not using anything to enhance my speed. I'm just that fast.
Sure. Like, okay. You know, like Deion Sanders. He was the fastest guy in the field. Like, what if he was superhuman?
Yeah. Are you going to Malcolm Gladwell these fools? Sorry, you're an outlier. You can't play.
Sure.
You can't play.
Sure. I mean, yeah, we could get in a whole conversation about, like, doping and what is an average testosterone level and, like, how ridiculous competitive sports are nowadays. But that's going to be for the Flash. I guess that'll come up in the Justice League.
The Justice League, we will definitely discuss this more.
We will get to the bottom of metahuman performance in sports.
Yeah.
And maybe they walk among us. All right, that's it. We'll see you for Dunkirk. Till then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.